Again, we're so glad to be here tonight to have you and have so many visitors and have so many of the young folks that I know fairly well. Been with them recently. One of the reasons I'm so glad to have so many young people is I've got fresh material. I've got fresh material to work with in talking about this subject of husbands and wives. But I'm also working on those of you who have been married for some time. We all need to think about this. This is where I'm going to take up. I already talked about this part, but I want to go back over this just a little bit. There have never been two perfect people to get married. Therefore, you know what this means? Adjustments. We're going to have to make adjustments. To fulfill any role ordained of God, we pointed out that the first thing one must be is a good person. And right here, I wanted to add a word or two. My goal is to reach you and persuade you. I do not want to alienate anyone. And so I want you to understand that when I talk about a marriage having problems, and I'm talking about the fact that somebody is not being what they ought to be, and that what you need to be is a good person. I want you to understand that when I'm talking about someone who may not be a good person in a balanced way so that there's trouble in the marriage, I'm not saying you're a bank robber. I'm not saying you're a serial killer. You know, our society's gotten to the point where somebody says, well, I'm a good person, meaning I don't do any of those things like that. But I just want you to understand that when I'm talking about a good person, I'm talking about a good person in the Bible sense of one who is biblically balanced in areas of his personality and character. Because you see, all of us have areas that are not what they should be. Every single one of us has some area like that. Now, we can either let that go and do nothing about it, or we can recognize that and seek to do something about it and bring it under control and bring it into balance. And that's what I'm talking about when I talk about being a good person. So we stress that this morning. This is the first goal to strive for. And a man, for example, who will be a good elder, needs to be first a good man in the sense that I've explained. A husband needs to be a good man. A wife needs to be a good woman. So in preparing yourself for marriage, one of the things, one of the main things you need to do is to prepare yourself to be a good person. Make yourself to be a good person in the sight of God. Having all areas of your personality and character in balance and having nothing that is out of control, that's what I'm talking about. And I hope that that is clear. I wanted to make that clear. And we're going to go on over some of the points here. We made the point that often people get married because they're in lust when they should be in love. And there is a tremendous difference. One of the differences being that lust will not motivate people to do what is necessary to make a marriage succeed, but love will. There's all the difference in the world between lust and love. The adjustments that I'm talking about are the things that must be adapted to make a marriage work. Some of these adjustments are connected with the development of Christian character, not just the development of a good marriage. Now, actually, it's awfully hard to separate developing a good marriage from the idea of developing character. And I think that's one thing that so many do not realize, and our society certainly does not realize that. We need to join those two ideas together in our thinking. So these adjustments, the things that must be adapted to make a marriage work. If your marriage fails because of character defects or because of unacceptable personality traits, then it's not just your marriage that has failed. It is your personality and character that have failed. You have failed in developing your personality and character to the point that they ought to be. And so this is something that must be done. You have not transformed if this is the problem. And you need to re-examine your whole life and your commitment to God. Now, this is where we got to in our study this morning, in our thinking. Now, I want to take a little time and examine some of the some examples of adjustments and just show some of the differences that sometimes exist and what needs to be done in connection with those. Temperament, in the sense of somebody is hot-tempered. Now, sometimes you've got one of the partners is hot-tempered and the other one is not. Sometimes you have both of them are hot-tempered. Guess when you're going to have more trouble? When both of them are hot-tempered. So what do you do about this? Now here we come back to this good person concept. If you're seeking to be a good person in the sight of God and you have a temper that gets out of control periodically, then you are not in balance. And you're going to have to bring that under control. And James 1, verses 19 through 20, point out that the wrath of God... In fact, let me just start a little earlier. Let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. The wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. There's very little good that wrath ever does. I discovered that young. I tore up stuff. I would get mad at it and tear it up because I was my wrath. And you know, the fascinating thing is that as many years as it has been, I remember thinking at the time that this is happening because I have a bad temper. And I remember being aware of that. We need to be aware of it. And remember, the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. So what do? You bring the temper under control. None of this, that's the way I've always been stuff. No, that will not get it. There is no excuse. There is simply no excuse. So if you have a hot temper, it's time to get it under control. Absolutely. Bring it under control. And you need to do that before you get married. You need to have it under control. That's the goal to aim for. In Proverbs 10 and verse 26, I use this. We could choose a lot of other ones. So here's one thing, the temperament. Here's somebody hot-tempered. Maybe both are hot-tempered. How are we going to deal with that? How are we going to fix that marriage? We're not going to fix the marriage. We're going to fix the people. Here's someone who's easygoing. So you've got one that is, shall we say, wound up kind of tight. And we've got the other one, very easygoing. Now that can bring conflicts. If this easygoing verges over into being irresponsible, that's where it gets to be a problem. Now, easygoing is not a bad thing. In fact, I think there are a lot of things to recommend a personality that is a kind of a level, easygoing personality. Someone like that is pretty easy to live with. But if the easygoing verges over into irresponsibility, then it is most definitely not easy to live with. And so in this verse, Proverbs 10:26, as vinegar to the teeth and as smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to them that send him. You send a sluggard to carry a message. It's an important message. Then you find out he didn't go. He didn't tell the message. You send the sluggard to do a job. Then you find out, no, he never did it. He never did it. You have a husband that, honey, will you remember to do this, that, the other? Will you do so and so? Oh, yeah. And habitually, over and over again, he doesn't do it. Or you have a wife that, oh yes, yes, I will do that. Oh yes, I will take care of that. Or here are responsibilities. Here's work that should be done. And it's just not done. On and on and on. Over and over and over again. That gets hard to put up with. So on the one hand, yes, it's hard to put up with by somebody that has some conscientiousness and says this needs to be done, it needs to be done right. On the other hand, that person who has allowed a kind of a natural, easygoing disposition to verge over into irresponsibility, what do they need to do? Say, I've always been that way? No. You need to shape up. You need to say, listen, there are some things that matter enough that I'm going to have to deal with them. And you're going to have to transform. See? So if you have a problem like this in a marriage, it's not a matter of fixing the marriage. You have to fix the people. You have to make adjustments. So remember this morning I made the point that I'm not talking about husbands thinking that I'd sure like to adjust my wife. Or a wife saying, I sure would like to adjust my husband. No, I'm talking about you adjusting yourself. Yeah, I'm talking about self-adjustments to make marriage work. We have a control person versus a passive person. And because of that, sometimes there's some frustration that comes out. Problems that may arise. Or you may have two control people that are married. A control person is a person that feels like he or she has to run everything. That there is no detail that cannot be under his or her supervision. Nobody else can do anything. I've got to do it, or I've got to see that it is done. Now, that kind of a person can be hard to live with. So what do you do when you have a marriage that's having trouble because of this? Do you say, well, I've always been that way? Or do you look at yourself and say, yeah, I know that about myself. Okay, if you know it about yourself, that's the first thing. Now that you know it about yourself, what are you going to do? Are you going to look deep within yourself, within your heart, within your mind? And are you going to have the resources to change the way you are? That's what you're going to need to do. And you're going to need to think about such things as, how am I going to develop and bring my mate along? Do I want to keep my mate some weak, anemic little person that cannot have a thought of her own? Or vice versa with the wife and the husband? Or am I going to want to see my husband? Am I wanting to help my husband grow to be what he should be? To develop the abilities he has. And looking into your heart and into your life, and as I have used the expression so many times, reach for the spiritual. You reach for the spiritual. What does my spiritual responsibility to God require me to do here? Whatever that is, I'm going to reach down in there and I'm going to do it. And it may be that I realize that I'm not exerting myself enough. It may be that I'm not taking a stand enough. So what do I need to do? I need to reach down in my heart and find the courage of faith and stand up and exert myself. Because everything depends upon it. It's important. You can do it. These adjustments that I'm talking about can be made. But they have to be made. And then we have an orderly, calm, organized person versus a flaky, emotional, haphazard person. And you sometimes say, how did they get together? You know, sometimes you wonder, how did they get together? But they got together. Now that they are together, what? Well, I've always been that way. No, what you're going to have to do is to learn how to be different. And a lot of it is motivation. How motivated are you? How much do you want to? How important is it? You have to be motivated. Now, it's not necessarily that we've got here a situation where there's sin involved. Some of this, I think that sin may be involved. Here, we've got a thing that I don't think it's a sinful thing for a person to be orderly and calm and organized. I don't think it's a sin for somebody to be flaky and emotional and haphazard unless they allow that tendency to cause them to drop the ball and fail to accomplish what they're supposed to accomplish in life. Then it becomes a matter of reaching down and grabbing hold and doing something about it. Now, these are just some examples of the kind of thing that need to be done. We could talk about pride and how pride enters into it. Oh, pride can be a real mean thing in a marriage relationship. And it can be on both sides. But whatever the problem is, we've got to look into ourselves and make the necessary adjustments to bring ourselves, first of all, in the harmony with God and in the harmony with God's will. And having done that, we will find that the harmony of the marriage is almost a byproduct of the harmony that we have with God and then with each other. I really want you to understand that's the ultimate key to it all. Anything else is patching. Anything else is patching, just putting a Band-Aid on the thing. What must be avoided at all costs is what I call turf wars. And what happens is that all weapons are brought into play and gradually we fortify our positions and we're drawing apart and we're fortifying our lines and things are getting worse. And it's not the marriage that's in trouble, it's the people that are in trouble. And if this is not dealt with, if the people are not able to deal with their own personal, spiritual, whatever other kind of problems there may be, then it's going to be disastrous. Ego gets involved. Ego is a problem in so many things. When the ego gets involved, I don't care whether it's in, we talked about various other relationships, such as a preacher, elders, husband, wife, father, mother, children, whatever the relationship is, when ego gets involved in it, then it really turns everything negative. Ego, the word ego is a Greek word. It is the preposition that you would use if you were writing a sentence in Greek and you wanted to say I, because if you weren't saying I, you wouldn't even use ego. So when you want to use ego, you're saying I, emphasizing the I. So it's interesting that that's the word that was chosen by psychologists to refer to this thing that we talk about in connection with our pride and our feeling of self-worth and all of that. Ego gets involved. And responsibilities that are undertaken are completely forgotten. Responsibilities that were undertaken in the sight of God and of men, these responsibilities are forgotten. It is as if I don't have to do them anymore because we're having trouble. If you're having trouble, who said you don't have to do them anymore? God still expects you to meet the responsibilities you signed on for. You can't quit and you can't give up. When you're dealing with a God-appointed relationship, you've got to hang in there and keep at it. Now, I realize that sometimes immorality enters into a marriage relationship, and it may be a situation where one becomes guilty of adultery and the other one finds no recourse but to put that partner away. I'm not talking about that. But I'm talking about as long as something like that has not happened and we're working and we're in this relationship, we have the responsibility of that relationship to bear. And it's sad to say to bear when it should be to enjoy. One of the things that I'm so sad about is how many people are never going to know the depth of love and closeness and strength of bond and relationship that develops in the later years of life when you have been through the thick and the thin. You know, some people just get through the thick and they quit. When the thin just gets started, they quit. Man, you haven't seen anything till you get through the thick and the thin. That's when things really get deeper, richer, better. And if you don't hang in there for the long run, you will never know. You will never know that. Responsibilities must not be forgotten. In order to get his way, the man may punish his wife. He'll sull up. I don't even know if that's a dictionary word, but it sure is a good word, isn't it? We know all about that. We know what that means. Of course, none of us has ever sulled up, I'm sure. The man will sull up. Sounds almost funny to say the man will sull up. Seems more appropriate to say the kid will, the child. Boy, he's going to punish his wife by acting like a child. He sulls up, won't talk to his wife, or he shows her by going out and spending a whole ton of money. And you know, when I preach on this, I am reaching back into the files. And I am telling you what people have done. This is done. It's done all the time. And people do this. I'll show my wife. I'll spend a ton of money. What are you showing? Or he'll leave her to go hunting with his buddies for a week. That'll teach her. And then the wife may do the same thing, except go hunting with her buddies for a week. Most women won't go hunting with their buddies for a week. But she may withhold sexual privileges to get her way. See, there's more than one way to fight this battle. And it can get ugly. And when it gets ugly like this, it is also ungodly. And it is unscriptural. And it is unspiritual. It is not right. Neither one of these kind of behavior is acceptable to the Lord. The Bible says a husband is to love his wife and be a companion to her, period. That's a command. That's a command. And then sometimes you may need to do it just because it's a command, but the hope is that if you hang in there, it'll become more than obeying a command. I really am sorry when a marriage reaches the point where the only reason you're loving your wife is it is a command. But at the same time, don't ever forget it is one. And it is not a how you feel about it or if you feel like it. It is a command by God. Husbands, love your wives even as Christ also loved the church and gave Himself up for it. Husbands, love your wives. Someone says, I don't love her anymore. Well, that means you've stopped obeying the command to love your wife. You see, we're confusing the idea of a feeling of affection with the idea of the command to love your wife. I must love my wife whether I have affection for her or not. Now, as I've already intimated, it is a sad thing. It's certainly not a good thing when the only reason you're doing good to your wife and treating your wife as you should is because you're commanded to do it. The natural thing is that if you do work together and live together and you're what you ought to be, the affection is there. And there's so much more to it than just the command to do it. But at the same time, it is a command. And the wife is to love her husband. Older women are to teach the younger women to love their husbands that they are supposed to. And what this loving involves, they need to be trained and taught. Turn to 1 Corinthians 7, please. A few verses there that we need to read. We need to keep these verses along with other verses before us. The sexual relationship in marriage is never to be used as a weapon of warfare or as a tool of manipulation. And I have known it to be used by both men and women in the marriage relationship. Here is what Paul wrote to the Corinthians. Now concerning the things whereof ye wrote, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Now in the context of 1 Corinthians 7, that means because of particular circumstances at this time, it is not good to touch a woman in a sexual manner. That's the point. And what he's actually going to elaborate and say is that if you're not married at this time, it probably would be best for you to stay unmarried, because if you get married at this time, it's going to bring all sorts of complications that are going to be difficult for you to deal with. But this chapter is not at all to be set against the fact that in the garden God said, it is not good that man should be alone. So this verse needs to be interpreted in the light of the context of 1 Corinthians 7. This is not a general statement. But he goes on. But because of fornications, in other words, because fornication does happen, there are circumstances where it does happen. Because of fornications, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. Now, while we're on that verse, let me make the point that some people use that verse to say that no matter what your circumstances are, you can have a wife. No matter what your circumstances are, you can have a husband. This does not guarantee you the right, no matter what your circumstances may be, to have whatever woman or whatever man you may want as a marriage partner. If it did, then John the Baptist could not possibly have criticized Herod Antipas because he had taken his brother Philip's wife, Herodias. This verse does not say any such thing. What this verse is saying is that God gives to each man the right to have a wife, but that is under God-given and God-approved circumstances. And He gives to each woman the right to have her own husband. Let the husband render unto the wife her due, meaning the responsibility that you owe to her in the sexual relationship. And likewise also the wife unto the husband. The wife hath not power over her own body, but the husband. And likewise also the husband hath not power over his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not, meaning deprive ye not one the other, except it be by consent for a season, that you may give yourselves unto prayer and may be together again. So this passage teaches in a very concise way much about the essence of the sexual relationship in marriage. So we repeat the point that according to the Bible, and this and other passages in the Old Testament and in the New, we are taught that the sexual relationship is not to be used as a weapon of warfare or a tool of manipulation. Marriage involves divinely appointed roles. The husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church. This is a divinely appointed role. As we said this morning, the very first relationship was God with man. The second relationship was man with woman. They're both divinely appointed relationships. And so this relationship is given to us of God. That means that we are to respect it, we are to abide by it, and when we enter into this relationship, we must respect what God demands of us and requires of us. So in God's plan, when a woman marries a man, okay, here we are. You're a young woman. You can do your own thing, make your own decisions. You work where you want to work, all that kind of thing. And if that's the way you want it to continue to be, without having to say yes or no to anybody, stay single. That's the truth. You just stay single. Because regardless of the tides of society, regardless of prevailing philosophies, before God, when you marry a man, you must do so with the intent of submitting to his leadership. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22, wives, be in subjection to your own husbands as unto the Lord. Verse 24, but as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives also be to their husbands in everything. Colossians 3:18, wives, be in subjection to your own or to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. This means that in God's plan, when a woman marries a man, she does so with the intent of showing him respect as the leader, that he is the leader. He is to be acknowledged as the leader, not the dictator, not the tyrant. It's actually a very beautiful relationship. You see a father who's what he ought to be. He leads and guides and teaches the children, but he's not a dictator. He's not a tyrant. He's not some kind of a monster. You take the elders with the church, if they're what they ought to be, they are also that father, shepherd, kind. They're not tyrants. They're not dictators. And in the relationship of the husband and the wife, he's not a tyrant or a dictator, but he is leader. In like manner, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that even if any obey not the word, they may without the word be gained by the behavior of their wives, beholding your chaste behavior coupled with fear, whose adorning let it not be the outward adorning, the idea of the emphasis being upon the outward adorning of braiding the hair and wearing jewels of gold, or of the putting on apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in the incorruptible apparel of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. And here's the thing. A woman who does not do these things will give answer to the God who is a consuming fire. I can't think of any more serious way to emphasize this responsibility. The husband, as we've pointed out, is to love his wife, Ephesians 5:25, as Christ loved the church, meaning he will sacrifice himself for his wife. He will give himself for his wife. He will spend himself for his wife and for his children. And thus the love is not a mere claim, but it is something that is demonstrated. So this means that in God's plan, when a man marries a woman, he does so with the intent of nourishing and cherishing her. She is to be a prized possession of his that he is to nourish and cherish as Jesus did the church. The parallel is Paul's, not mine. This means that in God's plan, when a man marries a woman, he does so with the intent that he will not be harsh in his leadership. And turning back to Colossians 3:19, husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them. That word bitter means to be harsh, to be ugly. Now, I have seen men who, if they were not being ugly, you could sure have fooled me. We have no right to be ugly to our wives. Merely because they have agreed to be subject to us does not give us the right to put them down, to be ugly to them, to speak brusquely to them. That is not right. It is absolutely not right. And we should not do that. And if he is harsh and dictatorial and selfish, he will answer to the God who is a consuming fire. Just as we have pointed out in the case of the husband and of the wife. Marriage takes two. Marriage takes two. The best man in the world cannot be a good husband if his wife will not let him do the things that a good husband is to do. And the best woman in the world cannot be a good wife if her husband will not let her do the things a woman is supposed to do. There is a work that each has to do, and the balance must be kept. A husband may be too hard on his wife and not realize the damage that he is doing to his weaker vessel. 1 Peter 3 and verse 7. Weaker means delicate. It means more delicate. It doesn't mean she's weaker mentally. But it doesn't mean she's weaker spiritually necessarily. But she is a delicate vessel. One that is special. One that we want to care for and not abuse. Don't be so self-centered that you do not realize that you're putting burdens greater than can be borne by your wife. A husband may enjoy pampering and spoiling his wife. I think that any husband, that's what he ought to be, enjoys doing that, doing special things. But this is sometimes carried too far, and the wife comes to expect it and fails to share, to take her share of the load. And so a husband needs to be careful. The wife needs to be careful about this kind of thing. I think it is a very good thing, a good thing for a man to want to treat his wife very special. But the wise and good woman will be careful not to accept that pampering to the point that she contributes nothing to the marriage except being a centerpiece. I cannot imagine a woman wanting to be merely a centerpiece. I think what most of us feel like is we have a pretty good centerpiece, but it can also do some other things. The best marriage counsel that may be given is that a husband and wife both need to obey the commandments that God has given regarding marriage. And that they need to obey those commandments out of a deep desire to honor God. If both will do this, their marriage will be a success. Well, I hope that the lesson will help. Marriage is a wonderful thing. It is a blessing. And it is full of blessings. The relationship of marriage itself is a blessing. But the benefits of marriage are also a blessing of God. In fact, the blessings are manifold. So, I'm very glad that you were here tonight for us to continue our study on this subject. And if you're not a child of God tonight, remember the points we made this morning. That what you need to do to prepare yourself for marriage is to make yourself what you ought to be. Become a Christian and be a faithful one. If you've not obeyed the gospel, believe that Jesus is the Son of God. Repent of your sins, confess your faith, be baptized to have your sins removed. If you're subject to the invitation of the Lord, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.